You're listening to the winabus.net podcast network.
They're back together again. Eric and Jeff are reunited as friends. Old Movie BS is back together again.
Hello, welcome to Movie BS with Bayer and Snyder, the internet's only movie podcast. I'm your host, Eric D. Snyder. That guy over there, that's my co-host, Jeff Bayer.
He was looking my direction, guys, when he said that guy over there, so it made perfect sense. I am Jeff Bayer. That is Eric D. Snyder. And away we go with our show. Let's do it.
We know how we begin every single show. Tell the people how we begin every single show.
Every single show.
Without fail.
Without fail. What is this, 497?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly how many shows.
That's nice. Nailed it. We start with an iTunes review. And what does that mean? Well, I'll tell you what that means. Just relax. It means that Eric reads the words that you write down on iTunes about this show in old-time radio voice.
This from Nebraska listener. Oh, hey, they got the internet in Nebraska now.
Oof. 2016. Everything's possible.
And here the title of the review is, "This review comes from an alternate timeline. In a world where Jeff never moved away, we discover that Eric has slowly grown resentful of Jeff's unparalleled height. As Movie BS skyrockets to international fame, Jeff and Eric's friendship becomes ice cold. Eric's resentment shows itself in small ways at first, choosing different screenings, forgetting to call, but then escalates into never giving the BS stamp of approval to any of Jeff's favorite movies. Eric's slow-burning animosity finally explodes after winning the 2016 Box Office Challenge. While cutting Jeff's hair, he chops off one of Jeff's ears. Jeff's new look is broadly praised as artsy and edgy. He is cast in the next Paul Thomas Anderson movie. As Movie BS records its final episode, Eric removes a Mission Impossible-style mask to reveal he is really M. Night Shyamalan. Fortunately for us, we live in this timeline. Keep up the good work." Thanks, Nebraska listener.
Fortunately for us, I want to be in that one. I'll lose an ear.
All right. Well, I can make that happen.
People that haven't met me, I have giant, giant mammoth-sized ears. And I feel that way strongly.
I feel that is, I don't feel like that's true. I feel like your ears are proportionate to your head, but they stick out.
How dare you?
It's not their size, it's their angle.
Okay, their angle is, you're right, but here's the kicker. This is why I always feel this way about my ears. I've had these two ears on my head my whole life. The thing that people don't understand is they've always been this size and always been this angle, regardless of the rest of my body.
So at what point did you grow into your ears? Well, probably when you hit your height, however tall you are when you got there.
I mean, I think I'm still waiting, but... I would say college.
You have a big head, too, is the thing.
I didn't know.
You're a big, tall guy, but proportionately, your ears like match the rest of you.
And I didn't even understand how to be like, it doesn't matter. I got big ears. Go ahead and cut one off. I'll hang out with, who was it? P.T. Anderson or Wes?
Mm-hmm. P.T. Anderson.
All right.
Yeah, it'll be in one of his movies.
That's fine. Done.
You know, cutting off one of your ears, if anything, will just draw attention to your remaining ear and make it seem even larger by comparison. Mm. I don't think you've thought this through all the way.
It's kind of like, remember the days where you didn't know that Stephen Colbert had two different ears? Such a long time ago. But then somebody told you, and then that was it.
Or before you saw Tom Cruise's middle tooth.
His middle tooth.
Now I can never unsee it.
Yeah, you always have to look at the beginning of a Tom Cruise movie to make sure he's still got the middle tooth.
To be fair, you can't unsee anything. That's the nature of seeing things, is that it only happens one direction.
If you had my memory, you would not have that issue.
Anyway, that's the show. Oh, no, we have some movies to review. That's what we do here. That's what they're paying us for.
They are, a little bit.
Right?
Yeah.
First up, Morgan.
Morgan,
get down from there.
Would you stop it, Morgan?
Morgan!
It's just what it sounds like.
Morgan.
Sounds like a kind of bratty 8-year-old boy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually about a bratty 5-year-old girl who's not really a girl. She's an it.
And she doesn't really look like she's 5.
No, she has aged much rapidlier. This is a science fiction thing, I guess, where you got Kate Mara, is a risk management consultant for some corporation who goes off to a facility out in the woods somewhere where there's been something gone awry with one of the laboratory experiment situation things.
She's got to get to the bottom of it. She's got to figure out if this L series should continue or not.
Because you want to know why? Here's why. As somebody says, we don't want another Helsinki.
No.
Whatever happened in Helsinki, it was not good.
And
we see the first thing we see in this movie is we see like surveillance footage of a meeting that goes wrong where a girl, Morgan, apparently like stabs somebody in the head, which she was not supposed to do. Jennifer Jason Leigh, of all people, gets stabbed in the eye.
Yeah,
poor Jennifer Jason Leigh. All she does anymore is get beat up in movies.
That's true.
Man.
She's got a hot streak going.
So Lee Weathers, Ms. Weathers, Kate Mara shows up to just see what's going on here. And Morgan, yeah, is this thing very conveniently, as she asks, as Lee asks to be updated, the main doctor, played by Toby Jones, has a handy video that he shows her that summarizes the whole project right. So far. Which,
even
is,
though she clearly
she works for the company,
this,
she already right. knows all this. She needs to know. It would have been funny if she said, "Yeah, I know that, but tell me what happened yesterday. Like, why am I here?" But so yes, we find out they've been trying to. They're using digital. No, not digital. Genetic research, doing genetic research, making fake DNA, and they made this Morgan out of nothing, I guess.
It was something.
Like
we
that
saw
song.
A little something
like
in the
that
video.
Song, making Morgan out of nothing at all. It's yeah. We don't. They don't explain like how she's born or sort of developed. Anyway, she looks like a human girl, but she aged very rapidly, and she now looks like she's a teenager, and she's only 5. Super smart. All that. You know the drill. They made a super smart human.
Right.
Now
there's some baggage going on.
Yeah, no, nothing goes wrong. You build a super smart human out of nothing. Obviously, what could go wrong? The issue is whether she's violent, you know, having stabbed Jennifer Jason Leigh in the eye.
Right. And there's this staff of doctors that have all kind of grown with her over these 5 years. And
got attached to her, got attached to each other. I wasn't terribly interested in these people.
I'm not terribly interested in these people, and the movie isn't necessarily either. It's more about the process here, and
they're nervous. They're worried that Kate Mara is going to shut down the program and make them have to, because this Morgan is like the third or fourth one of these that they've tried.
Yeah, and there's some nice little teases here about one of the characters might be a little too close, or then there's like a quick shot of a rifle, and you know, okay, that rifle's going to matter later. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, Morgan is impressive, but they don't go into details. And that's the thing. It's a movie that's more about mood and pretty light on details as far as what her capabilities are, what the goal of the project is.
Right.
Why these same people would be with her for 5 years, but like nobody else really would have been.
They talk about her as a product. The idea is mm-hmm. it's to do with artificial intelligence, I guess, maybe like to sell, like as a companion or something. I don't know. Yeah, they don't get into the details there, and they don't really tell us what it is that she can do. They hint at maybe some psychic powers a little bit, she clearly. The deal here is she is learning. Morgan is learning about emotions and what are the correct emotions to feel. And Paul Giamatti shows up to do the psych evaluation. It's a good scene.
Things don't necessarily go well.
Right.
I really liked Kate Mara here. I liked her as the no-nonsense mm-hmm. person that's just like consistently like, let me handle it. Get out of the way.
Yeah, let me do my job here and do my risk assessment.
Mm-hmm.
Risk management.
I was never bored.
Yeah, I was never bored. I was never terribly enthralled either.
You know
though.
What? Here's the problem. It's a really obvious problem. There's other movies that exist from the recent memory that did something like this and did it better. Ex Machina
is kind of similar to this, yeah.
And that's not, you know, that's not this movie's fault, because I'm sure this was in the works when Ex Machina was in the works, that sort of thing.
Probably.
There's moments of Hannah that you kind of think of as
Hannah,
well.
Yeah. Just like, because there's only a few directions this can go, and it goes in
right.
them. And, yeah. Directed by Luke Scott, who is the son of Ridley Scott. by the way.
Produced by Ridley Scott's company, I believe.
By his
Scott Free Productions.
Yeah, by his dad.
Yeah. There's nothing bad about it. It just never really raises itself beyond. It feels small, and at some points, I'm really happy that it's small. I'm happy that it's just kind of this one setting.
It is bigger. Small, isolated cast. Yeah.
But at the other point, it just, once you realize it's remaining small, there's not a lot that can be done.
Right. And how many, I feel like we've been, since the dawn of cinema, we've been watching stories about arrogant scientists creating something they can't control and then being surprised when they can't control it. And we have to like try to be sympathetic for them. Like, have you never at least seen a movie? You know what always happens? They're always going to underestimate what the thing can do. And yeah, I'm just, when will we learn?
I mean, that's the thing. I would say I normally take maybe a page or page and a half of notes. Normally I'll flip my page, flip my little notebook over at some point. I wrote like a half page because there's not a lot of meat on the bone with this movie, but it's not a bad movie.
Not at all. This would be a good one to watch on cable sometime.
Totally.
I give it a C.
Oh, okay, I'm a 6 out of 10. I'm a little bit higher than you.
I'm maybe a C plus. I don't know. C plus. What?
You saw something coming that I didn't. And that normally doesn't happen.
That's
with
true.
Us.
Yes, the one thing stood out to me, and I won't say anything more about it. But one thing jumped out and didn't jump out at you. And I'm not saying that makes me better.
No. In this particular case, for this one moment, you are technically a little bit better
at knowing what was going to happen in Morgan. I was better than you. That's true.
Yeah.
There you go. Here's a movie to talk about: The Light Between Oceans.
The Light Between Oceans.
Sounds like the name of a book. Oh, it was the name of a book.
This movie definitely has the feeling of being a novel first.
Written and directed for the screen by Derek Cianfrance, who made Blue Valentine and The Place. What was it called? The Place Beyond the Pines.
Yeah.
Both with Ryan Gosling. Now I guess he's forsaken Ryan Gosling.
Gosling could have fit quite easily.
Maybe.
I wonder if he was busy.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, instead you got Michael F. Fassbender and Alicia Vikander. And what did you want to say about this?
I would just say this. It's a movie that's set in like 1918, I believe, is when it begins. It's about a guy who wants to be isolated in a lighthouse, and it's a romance. And it takes a turn with them in starting a family and the difficulties that brings. And then it goes further into that regard. What we're going to be talking about reveals some things that kind of happen.
Reveals like, the basic one line of what the movie is about.
Completely. And it's like, but that doesn't really happen until 45 minutes into the movie. So if you're a freak like me and you want to go in fresh and that was enough for you, then, go ahead, look at the show notes and skip ahead and listen to the rest of the show. That's all.
All right.
Now let's talk.
Also, don't look at the IMDb page.
That's right. Don't look at that. And probably, and in all likelihood, don't watch any trailers.
Right.
And that's all you have to do, people.
Right. or just see the damn movie.
Right.
They're on an island. It's the lighthouse of Michael Fassbender, Alicia Vikander, and they wind up. They have a little girl, adorable little girl.
Oh my gosh!
Cute little Lucy.
Oh boy!
And then back on they're isolated here, but back on the mainland. This is off of Australia. Back on the mainland in the village, you got Rachel Weisz, whose husband and daughter died.
Right.
And the movie is about families and parenthood and grief and various things.
So the first section of this movie, you can tell it's spelled out. Michael Fassbender, he wants a quiet life. He saw some things in the war. He served in the army. He wants to be done with everybody and everything because of what he went through. But when you get a look at and you talk to Alicia Vikander, then come on.
Right.
You'd rather be happy with her, right?
Isabel. So Tom and Isabel to fall in love, and it's a lovely. They have a very
so sweet in the beginning.
Nice little courtship.
A sweet little movie.
And he's a really good husband. I like Fassbender in this role as this truly compassionate and adoring husband.
Yes, and there is this this moment that will make you wonder, what would I do? What would I do in that situation? And at first I thought I would do one thing, mm-hmm. and the more I thought about it, the more kind of not necessarily ridiculous, it sounds, but you realize it's a moment of weakness that this couple has in their desire, to be wonderful parents,
right.
And to have this family when otherwise all they have is each other, because this lighthouse is very isolated. It's a matter of, like, you know, they're seeing people once every 3 months besides the guy that, like, brings them some supplies and some mail,
right,
and
right.
things like that. And it really is an interesting study. And for me, with this little adorable Lucy, I couldn't get past how much grief I was feeling. Mm. I was totally sad and overwhelmed at times.
Because it makes you think about what you would do if you lost a child, or if you had to give up a child, or if a child was taken from you.
For me, the most gut-wrenching, honestly, the most gut-wrenching thing was thinking about the idea of my 3.5-year-old son not wanting to be loved by me, but instead wanting to be loved by somebody else.
And, me, for example. I was like, all right, Dylan, come on. You're coming home with me now. I'm your dad now.
I honestly don't know if you noticed. I was just like wiping away streams of tears.
I know. I saw that. Yeah. I was embarrassed for you. It was humiliating.
because it really did just make me simply think about the basics of parenthood and the grief that can come from mm-hmm. so many situations around that. And it's beautifully done. I can't imagine my wife ever happily sitting through this process of a movie.
I mean, here's the thing. It is very beautifully done, very nice and lovely. The music is beautiful, and the acting is all
the
very nice. And
the lighthouse is gorgeous.
Looks terrific. It's got those kind of heartbreaking moments, and it's a bittersweet, sad kind of story with lovely moments and some lovely characters. But I asked a friend of mine who usually likes weepy movies. I asked if this looked like kind of movie she'd want to see, and she said, "No, it looks too sad." And I'm gonna tell her, yeah, I think you made the right call there. I think this movie would be too sad for you.
Yeah,
and it's a good movie, but you have to be in the right kind of mood for that.
Yeah, I was kind of curious because I still haven't had a chance to see Pete's Dragon. Mm. And I know that a lot of our friends who saw it were talking about, like, I can't believe how quickly I cried. So now I want to do a case study of just me because I am somebody who's very capable of crying during the movies as opposed to real life.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
so it's like, all right, sign me up. Let's see which one has more tears for me. Cause so far The Light Between the Oceans, I think that's the most tears I've had in 2016 in the theater. I nothing else is immediately ringing true.
Hang on. When did we see Anchorman 2? No, that was a couple years ago. You're right. Never mind. Pete's Dragon. I didn't cry in Pete's Dragon until the end.
Okay.
I can see where crying would happen earlier, but for me, but when it did happen, when
I
it did
see
happen for
how
me,
humans who have hearts could do it.
I could.
My alien sensibilities.
I could see how parents particularly would have cried at an earlier part, but when I did cry, like I was weeping.
Oh really?
So wait, yeah.
And you didn't shed a tear for this one. Right?
I didn't cry at this one, and I think probably not being a parent, I'm sure this is a thing where I get it, I understand it, but it would not affect me as personally as it would if I had children that I know of.
I bet my former self would have watched it and been like, ugh. Oh God, this is the sort of thing they think parents would cry during. I bet that would have been me.
Could be.
But yeah, it did work for me, and it made me think, and it definitely I think for most, you would leave the theater and you would talk about, you know, what would you do? What would you, mm-hmm.
oh,
what
for
would
sure.
you be willing to risk? And that's some good stuff there.
Yeah. I it's a perfectly good movie. I give it a B.
I give it an 8. Yeah. And I'm kind of happy that it's not BS approved because I don't want people to just blindly look at that list and be like, they both liked, Oceans. Oh, maybe it's a little romantic movie. That'll be fun for
us. I don't
us.
Know, but you're okay with some of the things that are BS approved?
Green Room, for instance.
Green Room, for example. Yeah, you're fine with Green Room.
Yeah.
Is being blindly recommended.
Yes. I want somebody to blindly turn that on and not know what they're watching and be like, oh, maybe Eric and Jeff are really into the punk scene and I didn't know it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then finally, we come to Complete Unknown.
Another Bob Dylan.
Mm. It's been a year of those. You're keeping track?
Yep.
Of course you are.
Technical lyrics of Bob Dylan songs.
Mm-hmm. How unknown is she? Complete. Complete unknown.
Complete.
This movie...
Spoiler alert, by the way. Hmm. It's a she that's completely...
Well, yeah. Unknown. It begins, it's Rachel Weisz. Did you know her name is pronounced Weisz?
Yeah.
Okay. I learned that because a friend of mine, whose name was Jeff Weisz, but spelled V-I-C-E, who's a movie critic in Salt Lake City, he's the one who died a few years ago, tragically, suddenly. He ran into her, at Sundance. Sorry, no, I told it wrong. No, he met her at Sundance and learned the pronunciation of her name because he was sitting in a theater discussing her with someone, wondering how it was pronounced, and she, sitting behind him, leaned forward and said, "It's Weisz," and it was the same pronunciation as his name. And there she was, and it was a funny thing. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that? That's really good.
Once I got that story together, it's a great story. Yeah.
It's a really good story.
So that's how I know her name is pronounced Weisz. You probably know her name because she's been on talk shows.
Yes.
And you watch talk shows.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Rachel Weisz. She's completely unknown. The movie starts with her in like it's the same person or the same actors anyway, doing a few different things, like sort of snippets, little vignettes quickly of one person's different lives, or we're not sure what the deal is there.
That's right. You're getting a glimpse of a magician assistant, a nurse, and you're not really sure what to make of it. And the movie's good about that.
Yeah.
It's properly confusing, slightly intriguing, I would say. Not
sure.
Terribly. It's not a thriller. You're not immediately on the edge of your seat. What? Who is this? How many people?
No, but it's a good way to start a movie because because you don't know. You're a little bit confused. You're like, oh, what's going on here? And because it turned out it's not confusing at all, but it was a good way to drag us in. It's actually very easily explained.
Eventually, it's very easily explained. The nice thing is we are teased, and then Michael Shannon is teased. And I've decided... He might be my favorite actor to look at on the big screen right now. You know what? He's my favorite actor to look at on the big screen right now.
He'll be so glad to know.
Yep. It, no matter what he does, I'm intrigued by what he brings to the table.
He always looks slightly bitter, slightly put off, mm-hmm. but also like slightly amused, amused and slightly fed up with whatever your crap is.
That's right. And I like all of those qualities.
Sometimes you're not sure. Sometimes it seems like he's really amused by you, but he could snap in any minute and just kill you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. No, I like it, too. It's very fascinating to watch. And he is a guy named Tom. He's some kind of I was never clear what his job is, him and his partner. They're some kind of lobbyists, or they do, like, scientific writing for law proposal, something.
So wait, do you think the technical term of he's a national recommender? Was that not?
That doesn't seem like the name of the job. Whatever it is, doesn't matter. He does something with science and whatever. But he having his birthday party, and Rachel Weisz, her character, Alice, she's called, shows up as the date of one of his friends, and he recognizes her. He knows her from before. And mm-hmm. then it's about that and how they know each other from before and what she's been doing since. And it's about identity and our names and our identities that we choose for ourselves and whether we're tied to them and all that.
Yeah, and she's kind of interesting. That's how I felt.
Mm-hmm.
The performance is kind of interesting. The character is kind of interesting. But for me, the key to this film was Michael Shannon's involvement in how he was going to question her, what his curiosities were about her, and everything to that regard. And so I was slightly tinged with interest when it was telling her backstory occasionally or giving a little bit of a flashback that felt a little common. It didn't reside with any interest per se when she was supposedly exploring her past and talking about it.
I did like that when she said she moved to Portland and we saw her in Portland, that the audience laughed because she looked like Portland. Like they almost didn't even just say where she was. Like, oh, yeah, that's her Portland phase. She's the sort of chameleon kind of character. And those characters are always interesting to me, and the way that she can effortlessly make up backstories and everything.
Yes, and it's showcased perfectly. Maybe this is halfway through the movie when both characters, Alice and Tom, are in a situation where she wants him to play along a little bit with this elderly couple played by Danny Glover and Kathy Bates.
Yeah.
And to me, that's where the movie starts to shine.
Where he gets a taste of kind of what she does.
Yep.
Of her making things up and her living life in the moment and all that. And you can see the appeal. Like we're like you said, we're seeing thing. It all through Tom's eyes, and he can see the appeal in it, and we can see the appeal in it. And it's all about, you know, what kind of choices you want to make long term.
It finally becomes something that is very nicely gray. Like before that, it was just like, yeah, I get what you're doing, Alice, but I don't really appreciate it. And the thing about it is I didn't really appreciate how it was necessarily portrayed in the film.
How what was portrayed, her
how,
what she does?
How her past lives were, how she was communicating it. I didn't think it was like an amazing screenplay or great direction or really good cinematography. I just felt it was mildly amusing. But then it turned into something more that I was interested in. And not only was I interested, I was like, yes, I want to live through this scenario. Like, I want to describe more of what's going on. I want all of the details.
You're saying you want to do that? You want to make up a thing, or you want to see them do more of it?
I wanted to see them do more of it for my sake, because I know that I'm not going to be doing it. That was the case for me.
Gotcha.
Vicariously living through these characters became something that I was very interested in.
Right. It's a really small movie, small in scope and scale, and the ideas that it's about aren't like big, momentous ideas. And it does feel very small. You know who made it? Joshua Marston is the director and writer. He made that film Maria Full of Grace, 2004. Maria Full of Heroin, about the girl, the heroin mule. He's been doing TV since then. Good TV, yeah. Some of your Good Wife, your Newsroom, some shows I don't recognize. Anyway.
Say the titles.
Let's see.
That you're looking at them.
Black Box, Flesh and Bone, Berlin Station.
All right, let's stop doing that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's a perfectly fine – this would be a good movie to watch on an airplane because it's very talky and philosophical and not much to look at.
It reminded me there was a little bit of like Certified Copy or even Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, those films.
It definitely reminded me of the Before the Sunrise, Sunset movies, yeah.
The walk-in and talking, and there you go.
Because it's not ambiguous like Certified Copy. But it is that kind of arty, art house-y vibe. It's the kind of movie that was meant to be watched like on a screener at the end of the year.
Yes.
When you're plowing through screeners, I know this is a very specific situation that not all of our listeners can relate to. When you're trying to catch up on the good films from the year that you might have missed, the small ones.
Yeah, for me, again, the highlight was Michael Shannon.
Yeah.
If he wasn't there, I would have been disinterested on occasion, but I wasn't.
It's fine. I give it a B.
Yep, 7 out of 10.
And now here it is time for question of the week, question of the summer. Really?
The whole summer.
We asked, what were your favorite and your least favorite movies of summer 2016? And what's the results there? You said there was not a consensus.
There was a very light consensus at best. Definitely some movies got on both lists. Like that happens, of course.
Sure.
With differences of opinion. Do you have any guesses as far as what the favorite was? Because there was one that did get a little bit more votes than everything else.
I'm looking up now the list of the movies from this summer to refresh my memory. First of all, I'm going to guess that Ghostbusters is on both lists, favorite and least favorite.
Ghostbusters has multiple votes, I believe, on both.
Yeah.
But favorite outnumbered least favorite a little bit more. That was nice.
Interesting. Yeah. Maybe Finding Dory.
No.
No?
No.
People liked that Captain America.
Yep.
Civil War.
Captain America Civil War is the consensus winner for our listeners as far as who actually goes to the Facebook page and tells us what they think.
Right.
But yeah, then beyond that, it was Ghostbusters, Kubo, and Swiss Army Men.
Oh, nice.
Good job, people, seeing an independent. The most surprising answer, BFG got multiple votes.
Really?
The BFG. And then the out-of-nowhere thing that I think you would appreciate, how do you say it so quickly, the Mystery Science Theater reunion show got a vote.
Oh, MST3K.
MST3K.
3K, Mystery Science Theater 3000.
There we go.
That's fun.
Yeah.
What about least favorite?
Three Suicide Squad. There is one. Three tied for least favorite. That is one. One was animated, by the way. I'll give you that clue.
Did enough people see Angry Birds movie to not like it?
No.
Secret Life of Pets.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then my favorite of the summer, which I didn't realize until I was doing this, Jason Bourne.
Yeah.
Those were the three that were the least favorite. And then just behind that was Star Trek and Independence Day 2. I think, simply put, not enough of our intelligent listeners paid money for Independence Day 2.
Well, that's good to hear.
I kind of like that. That's nice because obviously somebody saw Yoga Hoosiers.
Yoga Hosers.
I, a Midwestern boy, of course, would immediately.
Yoga Hoosiers. Yeah,
there we go.
That's coming out, I think, this weekend. I don't know if we would. Yeah. I guess Labor Day weekend, I guess, is what would consider the end of the summer. So that would count as a summer movie.
And then somebody said Pete's Dragon.
Mm.
Now, I haven't seen it.
Wait, for least favorite?
That's right.
Oh.
So if you want to go off right now on this individual.
What was their most favorite?
Best Finding Dory. Worst. Pete's boring as hell dragon.
See, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. That doesn't make any. I want clarification. You, whoever said that.
Well, it was Nate, and he also used the word boring to describe Pete's Dragon.
It is a little bit slow. It's very gently paced, for sure. Actually, I'm not surprised that someone would find it boring. I'm surprised that they would admit it. That's what surprises me.
It's nice.
Now, in terms of box office, this is interesting. Finding Dory it made the most money of any movie this summer.
Oh,
wasn't a consensus favorite. So more people saw that, but it wasn't necessarily their favorite. Then Captain America: Civil War, then Secret Life of Pets and Suicide Squad. So there's two movies that people didn't like that were still the third and fourth highest grossing movies of the summer. It's interesting that there's like almost no division in how much money, not much difference in how much money they make between everyone's favorite and everyone's least favorite.
Ooh,
all we know is that people saw those movies, not necessarily whether or not they liked them.
I think the most curious person for me is Zach, because his best was the BFG.
Okay.
All right, so you got that in your head, right?
Right.
His worst was Swiss Army Man. Both have farting, right?
Both do have farting, yes, they do.
So I don't get it.
So I'm going to guess that farting was not the criteria that he used in determining whether he liked or didn't like them.
But how else do you judge those two films if it's not for their farts?
Well, that's a good question. What was your favorite? Oh, you said Jason Bourne.
Jason Bourne was my favorite, and I don't know what my least favorite was. Do I?
I think you missed the worst ones. Like I don't think you didn't see Angry Birds movie.
I didn't see Angry Birds. I didn't see Purge.
Or Secret Life of Pets.
No, I did. I did see that.
Oh, you did see that.
And I found
did?
That tremendously boring.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
I'm sure I gave a 3 this summer. I don't think I gave a 2 for anything this summer.
If only there was some way of looking up.
Wait, do you know yours?
Among my favorites, according to our review database on moviebs.com, Tickled. Remember Tickled?
I remember Tickled.
That's up there. It was one of my favorites. The Nice Guys I liked.
Yeah, I liked that too.
I liked Captain America. Pete's Dragon.
Wait, what did you give Captain America?
According to this, I gave it a B+. You gave it a 7.
Yeah. Wow, that's light years difference.
I don't remember that movie at all. It was like 4 months ago.
If I remember correctly, Paul Rudd.
And why would you?
Paul Rudd at one point was like, "Hey, we're all in a movie together."
And yeah,
that's that mainly what I remember. Mm,
Don't Think Twice, like that a lot.
Yeah. So you don't have a clear favorite.
If I had to choose one, I guess I would say Pete's Dragon.
Wow.
But I don't have to choose one. Because maybe it was that. Maybe it was Tickled. Maybe it was Neighbors 2. Maybe it was Hunt for the Wilder People.
Technically, you do have to choose one because you're going to make a top 10 list and then people can just look at the release date and figure out which one was your favorite. So technically.
Right. But I don't have to do it now.
There you go.
Yeah. So suck it, time.
I think you're actually asking the listeners to suck it. Because here they went and did a lot of hard work.
No, they didn't.
They crammed. They tried to squeeze in. They got busy schedules. They got lives, Eric. But they took the time to answer this very important question.
Yeah, but I also saw more movies than they did. So I had more to sift through and consider. We should have asked follow-up for your favorite and least favorite. Also, how many movies did you see this summer?
It sounds a little like you just said, I'm better than you.
No, I just said that I've seen more movies, and so it's harder to choose a favorite.
Okay, I'm just saying what it sounded like.
It's harder than if you've seen, like, 4 movies. I'm just saying. If we ever do our bonus show, show, it'll be called I'm Just Saying with Jeff and Eric.
That's going to be the spit off. That's what exactly.
No, I'm Just Saying with Eric and Jeff. We have to trade off. Bear and Snyder on the show. And I'm first on the other one.
Oh, my gosh.
Just to be fair. Now, the question of the week for next week is it fair for us to trade the order of our names on our other shows?
We have something much more important to discuss and get in the lexicon of you listeners.
We want to talk about boats movies.
Boats movies.
Boats. It stands for based on a true story. Not movies about boats. Although some boat movies are also boats movies.
Example.
Wolf of Wall Street had some boats in it. Perfect Storm. There you go. The Perfect Storm. That's a boat movie.
Wolf of Wall Street was your first.
the first boat I could picture was Leonardo DiCaprio on that yacht. For some reason, that was the first boat that came to mind.
I don't know why that's hilarious because it's like
it's every- no. Here's why: because my brain immediately assumed that most movies with boats would be fictional because I'm thinking Pirates of the Caribbean and stuff. So I'm like, okay, what's a true story, like down to earth, real life, where somebody happened to have a boat?
Yeah, that's all.
But yes, then Perfect Storm. Perfect Storm is a boats movie
about a boat.
About a boat. Yeah. About a boat. Remember that movie about a boat? Anyway, no,
right,
well,
they're
saying boats. So for boats movies. So next week there's another one, Sully, kind of a boat movie because it's about the airplane that lands on the water, which is kind of like a boat.
Spoiler alert. There's a boat in the movie, maybe more than one.
A plane that becomes a boat, like a transformer.
No.
Is that not what
That's
it's about?
That's not what transformers do. They don't change from a boat to a plane and then they're done.
Sure, there must be one. There must be one that turns from a plane into a boat.
You do understand that Transformers change from a robot into something, correct?
One vehicle
to another vehicle.
I thought some of them did. Aren't there some? There's like a plane and a car and a robot.
I don't trust those.
The ones that go three ways?
Yeah. You got to pick. I've always felt. You can't go three ways with that.
Times are changing. Times are changing. Anyway, the point is, so for Question League, tell us your favorite boats scene, your favorite scene in a based on a true story movie? Your favorite based on a true story scene.
That's right.
Your favorite scene that was drawn from real life.
I want the emotion. I want the detail. Like, bring something out here, people. Come on.
You can email us, moviebspdx@gmail.com. And you can post it on Facebook, tweet at us.
You can also just go to moviebs.com to get all that kind of stuff about us. You can also even visit our Patreon page. You can become a patron.
Mm-hmm. Remember, if you patrons have the right to demand that we read your answer to Question of the Week on the show, even if it's a dumb answer.
By the way, one of the people that said their fave and their least actually did include that, and that was fantastic that they did that.
Oh, good. What were their favorite and least favorite?
Oh, that's right. I should specifically.
Since we should actually – see, here's the thing. I don't know if you understand. Part of fulfilling our obligation isn't just acknowledging that we are obligated. We then have to actually do it.
Fine. Scott said, I'm a patron backer. Favorite, Kubo and the Two Strings. Great choice. Nice. Least favorite, Ghostbusters.
Really?
And its pathetic cameos and callbacks to the originals, which that's the weird thing.
Cameos and the callbacks is definitely the weakest part.
That is the weakest part. So, like, Scott, we agree with you after you say the wrong thing.
Well, no. I agree with your reason.
Actually.
Maybe for him, maybe that was so much that it didn't – that outweighed whatever else good was in it.
And here's the thing.
He hated that stuff so much.
Here's the thing. If Scott only saw those two movies, I totally
that's
agree.
True.
I can't, I can't object.
Right. There you go. There you go. So that's the end of the show then. You know, what did we learn? We have The Light Between Oceans.
Mm-hmm.
That made somebody cry a lot.
Whatever. I'm human.
Then we had Morgan. Morgan.
Morgan. You can't. Morgan.
Morgan. Stop teasing your sister.
That was my favorite part of the movie.
Saying Morgan.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Complete Unknown is fine.
It's good.
Sure.
Yeah, and don't rush. Don't stop listening right now so you can go to the theater and find it and watch it.
But it's good. But if you don't have any interest in some of the more blockbustery things or you've seen them or whatever, and you want to see something smart and you know, for grown-ups, or if you got friends visiting from out of town, you want to impress them with how sophisticated you are, your taste in movies, take them to see Complete Unknown.
Or no, I would just stay home and be like, hey, there's this movie called Green Room. Oh, you've never heard of it? Here, I'll hit play. I won't tell you anything about it.
It's and just then watch their faces melt.
It's all I ever want to do anymore.
And Question of the Week, tell us your favorite based on a true story scene in a movie.
Boats.
Boat scene. Oh, extra points if it's a boat scene on a boat.
But only if you can prove through your writing that it was your favorite.
So no just claiming it was your favorite
because
it was on
you
a
can't
boat.
Just, you can't
it
just
needs
suck
to actually
to Eric,
be.
Yeah.
Right.
Not happening.
No, that's true. That's true. All right. So until next week, for Movie Us with Baron Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Baer.
Thanks for listening and good day.
I said good day.